From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our topic on this edition of the program, a preview of U.S. President Barack Obama's trip to Kenya for the Global Entrepreneurs Summit and his visit to Ethiopia. Our guest, Monde Muyangwa. She's the director of the Africa Program at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, and that's a think tank based here in Washington. And we are coming to you from the Wilson Center headquarters in Washington. Before coming to the Wilson Center, Ms. Muyangwa was academic dean at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies at the National Defense University here in Washington, D.C. For 11 years, she oversaw the center's curriculum and program development in areas of security studies, counterterrorism, and defense economics. Ms. Muyangwa has also participated in a number of Africa-related programs, including the Advisory Council of the Ibrahim Index of African Governance. She also has co-authored a publication for the International Peace Academy titled An Assessment of the Organization of African Unity's Mechanism for Conflict Prevention, Management, and Resolution. We'll talk with Monde Muyangwa about President Obama's upcoming visit to Ethiopia on the heels of his trip to Kenya for the Global Entrepreneurs Summit. This visit will be the first ever for a sitting U.S. president. We'll also preview Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari's visit to the White House coming up on Monday, among other issues critical to U.S.-Africa relations. Monde Muyangwa, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, Monde Muyangwa, let's talk about the Global Entrepreneurs Summit coming up in Kenya. We know that you'll be heading out to Nairobi as well for that. Talk about the importance of this summit, the fact that it's taking place for the first time in Africa. We know that previous summits have taken place in Turkey, the UAE, Malaysia, and Morocco. So talk about the importance of this summit and the significance of President Obama attending it.
This is very important, both to the U.S., but also to U.S. global relations, particularly with emerging economies. The Global Entrepreneurship Summit was actually born out of President Obama's 2009 speech in Cairo, in which he highlighted the importance of economic development to helping emerging economies fulfill the potential and the potential of their peoples. So it's absolutely critical. He has participated in one form or another in all prior GES summits, but I do think this is uniquely important because it is the first time that it will take place in sub-Saharan Africa. It is also important because of the role that Kenya plays in terms of being a hub of innovation, particularly in the IT sphere, but it is also the largest economy in East Africa. So it is important that Kenya is hosting this summit. The president's ties to Africa also make this an important trip for him and for the continent, and especially his ties to Kenya itself.
I have no doubt that he will be received with great affection.
Absolutely.
What do you think are the expectations from this summit?
The Obama administration has really tried to focus the spotlight on the economic aspects of its engagement with the rest of the world. And when it comes to Africa, you see this, I think, most vividly with last year's U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit, which was the first ever summit with African leaders that the United States has held. So it was a historic summit. Its focus was on business and economic engagement with Africa, because I believe President Obama really believes that you can assist Africa and emerging countries by helping them develop their capacities in that economic sphere. So it was a resetting or almost a repositioning of U.S.-Africa relations, and this helps him to consolidate his legacy in that area in terms of U.S.-Africa relations.
Well, speaking of which, and we know, Monde, that you were instrumental in helping organize that summit last year, what about concrete results in terms of economic development? And, of course, we know Power Africa. Talk about ways that we can measure the U.S. impact thus far because of this policy?
Concretely, I think the Department of Commerce, for instance, has undertaken a lot of work over these past years with trying to encourage U.S. businesses to engage in Africa, with trying to create an environment that allows more U.S. businesses, both medium-sized and large-scale, to do more business with Africa. We've also had the renewal of the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, which for many years has served as the cornerstone of U.S. U.S. engagement with Africa. It was just renewed for another 10 years. So I think this speaks to the commitment of this administration in terms of pushing forward with enhancing trade and investment with Africa. And I think it's a win-win situation for both Africa and for the United States.
Short break. We'll be right back.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
With David Bandy.
Back to Press Conference USA, our special guest is Monde Muyangwa. She's the director of the Africa Program at the Wilson Center. That's a think tank based here in Washington. And we are coming to you from Wilson Center headquarters. So back to you, Monde Muyangwa, to talk about another leg of President Obama's trip. He's also going to Ethiopia. And of course, this is the first time a sitting president is going there. It's also raised some questions because Ethiopia has some serious problems, notwithstanding its many high points and its progress, perhaps economically. There's a very strong clampdown on the press, and some critics are saying it sends the wrong signal. What do you think?
Both Kenya and Ethiopia have been controversial choices, I think, for some people in the Africa interested community. And I think that the key issue there in both cases has to do with the governance and human rights concerns in both countries. But I think we also have to remember that both Kenya and Ethiopia are key strategic partners for the United States, particularly in security issues. Somalia and the Horn of Africa present significant security challenges for both these two countries, but also the Horn of Africa in general. But there's also a global dimension to those concerns. And both Kenya and Ethiopia have been key partners for the United States. So I think this visit will be an opportunity for the president to personally thank these two countries for their contributions to trying to maintain peace and security, to tackle al-Shabaab in Somalia and in the Horn of Africa. It is also an opportunity, I think, for the president to thank the two countries for the role that they are trying to play both in United Nations peacekeeping missions, where Ethiopia is the fourth largest contributor of troops to UN peacekeeping missions in the world, and Kenya is 29th. But also their mediation roles in countries such as the ongoing conflict in South Sudan and the ongoing conflict in the Central African Republic. So I think that's important. The concerns on the governance and human rights issues, I think, are well placed. And this is definitely something that we would encourage the president to address while he is in both countries. And I'm sure he will. So finding the opportunity to raise those issues is going to be critical because those are issues on which the United States can speak with credibility, with a principled voice, and on which ordinary Africans look for the United States to speak to those issues. But let me just touch on this visit to Ethiopia. I think the framing of this visit is going to be important. I think rather than just see it as a visit to Ethiopia, which is important, I think it would have a higher impact if we framed it as a visit to the African Union. And if we frame it as a visit to the African Union, then it is an opportunity for the president to speak to ordinary African citizens using the African Union, which has a membership of 53 African countries, to speak to the rest of the continent on these key and important issues. And I'm certain that the president will do that.
Indeed, because as I said earlier, there have been many articles, particularly the Washington Post has been highly critical of the visit because Ethiopia, quoting the Washington Post, stands out in Africa for its increasingly harsh repression and escalating chokehold on independent media and political dissent. So let's hope that President Obama can strike a balance between our very necessary counterterrorism relationship and the need for human rights.
Absolutely.
And much less repression in that country. In contrast, of course, we have Nigeria, which recently held one of the freest and fairest elections in the continent. And we will be seeing newly elected President Muhammadu Buhari at the White House coming up next week. Talk about that visit. What are the expectations?
Absolutely. I think a lot of expectations for the visit, and I think it's a very, very important visit coming at a key time in U.S.-Nigeria relations. First, I think the visit is important because it's an opportunity for the president to congratulate and thank the people of Nigeria for what truly was, as you said, peaceful transition. The first time that there has been a peaceful democratic transition of power in Nigeria's 52-year post-independence history. And that's a significant achievement, not just for Nigeria itself, but for the signal that it sends to the rest of the continent on the issues of governance and democracy on the continent. So it's important for that reason. Number two, the visit is also important because Nigeria is Africa's superpower, for lack of a better term. It has been a strategic partner for the United States in key areas, huge trade partner for the United States. Nigeria has played a critical role traditionally in maintaining peace and security in West Africa, but across the region as a whole. And this leadership role had somewhat waned over the last few years. So this will be an opportunity to discuss the restoration of that leadership role on peace and security issues. The visit is also important because of Boko Haram and how it has ravaged not just Nigeria, but the regional dimension of that. And under the previous Jonathan regime, the U.S. did not really have a good and robust relationship in terms of being on the same page with the regime about how best to tackle Boko Haram. And I think President Buhari is signaling all the right things in terms of how he intends to prioritize the Boko Haram issue. The fact that he understands that it is going to take more than a military solution, but also to address the underlying causes. He's also reached out regionally to other leaders of neighboring countries to discuss a common strategy of how they can better address Boko Haram. So I think this visit will be an opportunity to address the value added that the United States could bring in helping and working with Nigeria on the Boko Haram issue. And then I think fourthly, President Buhari has also made a commitment to tackle corruption in Nigeria, which has been a huge concern, not just in Nigeria, but it is an issue that has really negatively impacted Nigeria's image abroad. Again, he's almost coming at this, President Buhari, that is, as if it's a personal crusade. And he does bring a legacy and focus to the corruption issue because in his first term as head of state in the 80s, this was a primary focus of his. And he's already signaling again that attacking corruption is going to be a priority for him. And some have criticized him for not naming his cabinet soon enough. But as I understand it from talking to people in Nigeria, one of the issues for him is he is doing a very thorough vetting to make sure that there are no issues to do with corruption and other things that might negatively impact the new members of his cabinet. So he's being very strategic because he understands what's at stake. And so I think this visit would be a great opportunity for the president and for Nigeria to talk about U.S.-Africa relations on these four core areas that I have just outlined.
We'll have more on U.S.-Africa relations in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. Our guest is Monde Muyangwa. She's the director of the Africa Program at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. That's a policy group based in Washington. I'm your host, Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. You can also send feedback via email to pcusa@voanews.com. Here's a shout out to a faithful listener, Facebook fan, Emmanuel Ngetich from Nairobi, Kenya. Well, back to you, Monde Muyangwa, to continue our discussion about Nigeria in the wake of President Muhammadu Buhari's visit to the White House. You talked about the fact that he is intent on combating this scourge of Boko Haram by also addressing the underlying causes and not just through a military solution, which is really extremely important. What are you hearing about some of the strategies he's coming up with to address these underlying causes? because we know that there are disparities in Nigeria, economic ones, particularly in the north where Boko Haram is active.
Absolutely. And those are exactly the issues that he has very directly spoken to, about addressing the underlying governance issues that have in some cases excluded some Muslim populations, ensuring that education and other social services are accessible to these populations and therefore making them part and parcel of the Nigerian fabric, this nation state that Nigeria is building, but also ensuring that women are empowered. I mean, he has spoken very directly to ensuring that once you get the need to provide education to young girls, and he specifically referenced the Chibok girls in talking about that, that we will provide to these communities the very education that Boko Haram is trying to deny them, of ensuring that there is this common identity that regardless of your regional, regardless of your religious affiliation, you do feel like you're benefiting from what it means to be Nigerian. He's talking about the socioeconomic challenges and the need to address those. The proof, of course, is going to be in what happens on the ground, but I have no doubt he sounds committed to the fight. The other thing that I thought was really striking about the strategy that he's outlining is that he has been very careful in talking to Nigerians about the need to modify expectations in terms of how long this fight against Boko Haram is going to take. He has been clear in saying that he is determined to bring the Chibok girls home, but he cannot promise a timeline or even that he's going to be fully successful in doing that, but that he will give it his best effort. This is not a short-term fight. This is something that's going to take a long time and really depends on how well Nigeria melds both the military tools with the other tools in the governance and socioeconomic spheres to really close the space to Boko Haram.
In that regard, Monde Muyangwa, how can the United States, as you said earlier, add value to this effort? We can provide, you know, lots of weapons and military equipment. We can perhaps help bolster the alliance with the neighbors, Niger, Chad, Cameroon, who are also fighting Boko Haram along with Nigeria. So in addition to that, how do you think the United States should be contributing to this goal?
I think it's continuing to reinforce what President Buhari is trying to do on the governance front, trying to reinforce his efforts with regard to inclusive development. So I think that's going to be critical. And I know we have any number of programs that are working in this field in Nigeria and other countries. But I also think we do have to talk about the military tool as well. U.S. military engagement with Nigeria was extremely strained during the Jonathan regime. In fact, we did not have any significant mill-to-mill relationships, in part because the United States was concerned about the professionalism of the Nigerian military and that if weapons were provided to the Nigerian military, that these would be used under a strict democratic civilian control of the military. There wasn't that assurance. And President Buhari's assumption to power, I think, gives an opportunity to discuss both the larger strategic framework within which security cooperation takes place, but also the mill-to-mill engagement that needs to take place. And I think joining President Buhari across those three spheres, the security dimension, the governance dimension, and the socioeconomic dimension, to see how the U.S. can bolster his efforts through different programs, I think is going to be absolutely key.
No doubt. And in one more point that you mentioned, which President Buhari is determined to pursue, and that's fight corruption.
Absolutely.
Which is endemic, whether it's in the military or particularly in the oil sector. And
yes.
I'm quoting from an Economist magazine article, which says that it's important to audit the country's oil revenues properly. By one estimate, according to the Economist, a third of them are stolen before they even reach the Treasury. How optimistic are you that he can tackle this huge endemic problem, but which is critical if the country is to go forward?
Based on his previous effort back in the 80s, one knows that there is commitment there. And you could quibble with how he went about it, but the focus and the commitment to addressing corruption is there. But I also think that as I look at the Nigerian press over the last couple of months, as I speak with Nigerians in Nigeria about this issue, I think one of the things that comes through about his approach is that he understands that this is a systemic issue and that what he is trying to do is unpack and break those systems that have allowed corruption to fester. And part of it is what's going on right now, the vetting process. The number of headlines that we have seen over the last few months about key Nigerian officials who are now suspected of corruption. And so there are clearly investigations going on. And I think this is part of his larger strategy of holding people accountable. So I have no doubt that those who are found to have done wrong, to have been corrupt in their practices, in engaging in business on behalf of the Nigerian people, will be brought to book. And I think that's part of what he's trying to do, really unpack and break that systemic corruption that has become, to some extent, part of the fabric of Nigerian society at different levels. It's going to be a long fight, and he has said as much.
Just as with the fight against Boko Haram, it's not going to happen one day to the next. So we need patience, but it sounds like he's on the right track. Turning briefly to Burundi, Monde Muyangwa, because we know that a controversial election is going to take place because President Pierre Nkurunziza has decided to run for a third term in elections where, theoretically, he is violating term limits, the Constitution, and the Arusha Accords that ended the country's civil war said that the president cannot run for a third term. But he is insistent on doing that. And in addition, he is clamping down on peaceful protests, which has incurred the ire of many people, including Ambassador Stephen Rapp, who is the U.S. Ambassador at Large for War Crimes. He says that those behind the ongoing violence in Burundi could even face prosecution. So talk about this election and how the AU in particular is dealing with this very delicate situation.
I think this is a key moment for Burundi. I will start off by saying that there is a disagreement over whether this is the second or the third term, with the president and his supporters obviously trying to see this as a second term, because he is arguing that he was not elected by the people the first time around, and therefore he's entitled to a second term. The vast majority, I feel, of Burundians and other people feel like this is an amendment of the Constitution to allow for a third term. And obviously this is a huge concern. It's been a problematic issue for the continent at large. We have several leaders who have attempted to change the Constitution, and that really undermines the growth of democracy, the entrenchment of democratic governance on the continent. So it's of concern at that continental level. It's particularly a concern for Burundi because of where Burundi has come from. We all remember the civil war in the 90s. And this was really an opportunity for the country to turn around. And there are many who feel that this change on the terms of the Arusha Accords is setting Burundi back in ways that the country may not be able to recover from for a very, very long time. And so that's the first point. I think a second point are the regional implications. You have the displaced people that are now refugees that are flooding into other countries. Rwanda is expressing a concern about this and obviously causing instability in those countries as well, particularly the ethnic balance in some of these countries. And so there's concern there about what the fallout of the situation in Burundi might be regionally. Having said that, I will say that the AU, I think, has done well to speak directly to the issue. They have called in a number of times for the postponement of the elections, that the environment was not good for people to go to the polls. Having general elections or presidential elections in this environment would not create for free and fair elections. Presidents within the region have individually tried to talk to President Nkurunziza to dissuade him from taking this path. So there have been multi-level efforts to try and get Burundi back on course. But the AU has tried, hasn't been very effective. Regional leaders have tried, haven't been very effective. But I think the international community is speaking with one voice, that the change in constitutional term limits, that that's not right, and really encouraging African leaders, including President Nkurunziza, to do the right thing. I don't know that he will, because it looks like elections are going to proceed.
Two quick questions before we close, Monde Muyangwa. Based on the fact that you studied the mechanism for conflict prevention, management, and resolution of the predecessor organization of the AU, I'd like you to quickly assess for us how you think the AU is doing in that regard.
I actually think this is one of the areas where the African Union has not been given enough credit. We came from the Organization of African Unity and transitioned into the African Union. But prior to the establishment of the African Union, the Organization of African Unity was unable to deploy peacekeeping missions. What you have seen under the African Union is an establishment of an African peace and security architecture, which includes both a conflict prevention mechanism, but also includes a conflict management mechanism once conflict has broken out. the AU is now able to deploy peacekeeping missions. And not only is the AU contributing to peace in Africa, but the African Union is also contributing to peace globally. Right now, the top 20 troop contributing countries are all African. And that's a significant contribution. So we have gone from an era where Africa was a consumer of peace and really dependent on outside community, the global community, to provide that peace, to one where Africa is contributing not just to peace and security on the continent, but more globally. And I think that's important. Having said that, the AU peace and security mechanism is not as robust as it could be or as robust as it needs to be. For one, I think the conflict prevention side of its mechanism needs to be enhanced significantly. 9 of the 16 UN peacekeeping missions are in Africa. I would like to see a time when conflict doesn't break out in the first place. So I think if we focus more attention on that prevention aspect of things, we then really reduce the cost, both in human terms, but also in development terms, of managing conflict after it has broken out. And I do feel that this is one of the areas where the United States could help the African Union develop a more robust peace and security architecture.
And lastly, Monde Muyangwa, Obama and Africa.
Yes.
I'd like you to talk about what you think President Obama, one could call him a native son of the continent, what his legacy might be. You know, President George W. Bush had the Millennium Challenge Corporation, for which he's quite fondly remembered.
As he should be.
And of course, the fight against HIV/AIDS. This is really extraordinary. What grade would you give President Obama, and what will be his legacy in your view?
This is a really important question. As you say, President Obama is a son of the soil, as Africans would say. So there were very, very high expectations of him. I do think that his legacy in Africa is severalfold, actually. The election of President Obama was a powerful global symbol, and an especially powerful symbol to Africa, because black people in this country are a minority. And so it sent an extremely powerful message to Africa to see somebody who was part of a minority group elevated to the highest office in the country. I think that's going to be part of the Obama legacy, that forced people to really look at governance and how leaders are elected, and how they rise by bringing together people from diverse backgrounds to elect this person who, if you think about it, 12% of the U.S. population is of African descent. Black people alone could not have elected President Obama. So it said a lot about this country, and it's also said a lot about President Obama himself, and it definitely left that impression on the continent. Secondly, I think the president has done a wonderful job in terms of building on the Clinton and Bush legacies in Africa as far as the different programs. You mentioned PEPFAR, President Bush legacy, and it's absolutely right to give him credit for that. That program has saved millions of African lives in terms of combating HIV/AIDS. I think the president's legacy in Africa is going to be his focus on economic development, which in many ways was what the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit was about, and really trying to move people from this idea of seeing Africa as a humanitarian cause, and that's all it is, but really recognizing that Africa can be a partner on key issues that matter to both the United States and to Africa, that you can get Africa to do more for itself by partnering in the economic space. And he has a number of programs, the Power Africa program that we talked about, the Doing Business in Africa campaign that the Department of Commerce is launching. We have the Millennium Challenge Corporation, which is also one of the popular programs that's doing a lot in the economic development space in Africa. But he's also going to be remembered, I think, for shining the spotlight on Africa's youth and women, but I think especially youth. He has created YALI,
exactly,
which is a huge program in the sense that it sends a powerful message, not just here, but also on the African continent, that you need to think about Africa's youth. They are Africa's future. 70% of Africans are in the youthful population. If you do not begin to build the capacities and provide opportunities and allow young Africans to bring their concerted energies and talents to the table in terms of furthering Africa's development, I think it would be a lost opportunity. What I would actually like to see the president do on this trip would be also to encourage African leaders to build their own complements to YALI. I think some African leaders ignore youth too much. or they see youth more as a problem rather than as a fuel, as an engine for growth, as a driver of Africa's future. So I think that would be a good message for him to send as well.
Monde Muyangwa is the director of the Africa Program at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. Thank you so much for your time and thoughtful insights. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise, and thank you so much for having me.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guest. Our engineer was Ted Schneider. And I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.